Why don't you read the sloka and then the word for word and then the translation and purport?
Six.
Eom Jyotirmayo Deva Sadananda Paratparaha Atma Ramasya Tasyasti Prakrutya Nasamagamaha.
Repeat.
Eom, thus, Jyotirmaya, transcendental, Deva, the Lord, Sat Ananda, the own self of eternal ecstasies, Paratparaha, the superior of all superiors, Atma Aramasya, engaged in the enjoyments of the transcendental realm, Tasya, of him, Asti, there is, Prakrutya, with the mundane potency, Na, not, Samagamaha, association. Translation: the Lord of Gokula is the transcendental supreme Godhead, the own self of eternal ecstasies. He is the superior of all superiors and is busily engaged in the enjoyments of the transcendental realm and has no association with his mundane potency. Purport: the sole potency of Krishna, which is spiritual, functioning as Krishna's own proper power, has manifested his pastimes of Goloka or Gokula. By her grace, individual souls who are constituents of the marginal potency can have admission into even those pastimes. The deluding energy who is of the nature of the perverted reflection of the spiritual chit potency has got her location on the other side of the river Viraja, which surrounds the Brahman Dhamma, forming the boundary of Maha Vaikuntha as the outer envelope of Goloka. The position of Goloka being absolutely unalloyed with the mundane, deluding energy, far from having any association with Krishna, feels ashamed to appear before his view.
There's a similar description of Krishna's position and Maya's position in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. I think we even may even chant those verses, where it describes how Vyasadeva in his trance, he's seeing the position of Krishna, and he's also noticing that Maya is standing outside very humbly. This is a wonderful description. Where is it? It's in this book, huh? Which sloka is it?
Bhagavatam 174, I think.
So, which tab is this? 174. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihite male apasyat purusham purnam mayam cha tad apashrayam. Thus he fixed his mind perfectly, engaging it by thinking and devotional service, bhakti yoga, without any tinge of materialism. And thus he saw the absolute personality of Godhead, along with its external energy, which under his full control. Due to the external energy, the living entity, although transcendental, to the three modes of material nature, thinks himself a material product, and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. Well, so that's our situation. So the Lord of Gokula is the transcendental supreme Godhead, the own self of eternal ecstasies. He is the superior of all superiors and is busily engaged in the enjoyments of the transcendental realm and has no association with his mundane potency. It's interesting in the purport here, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, by her grace, individual souls who are constituents of the marginal potency can have admission into even those pastimes. So he's using a pronoun here, by her grace. So who's her?
Potency of Krishna, soul, spiritual potency.
Yeah. But why doesn't he say by his grace? Why does he say by her grace? Who's he talking about? Who is Radharani. Right, so by the grace of Radharani. Radharani is the... Of course, Radha and Krishna are one. God is one, but he becomes two for the purpose of enjoyment. And so Radha, she's the source of love. She's the embodiment of love of God. And whatever qualities we have, it's because Krishna has, right? There's one nice purport in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna, he's saying, I am Prabhupada saying in the purport, he's saying that one can understand the nature of the Absolute by thorough investigation of oneself. So whatever we have, God must also have, because we come from God. So it's inconceivable potency how we're simultaneously one and different from God. And this is the beauty of Lord Chaitanya's teaching of achinta beta, abeta, beta tattva, you know, simultaneously one but different. And so all energy is one. I mean, even in a material sense, when you divide it up into its smallest components, it comes down to one energy. But it manifests in just the material energy itself. If we just look at that, we see that even though it's one energy, there's so much variety that is produced. So therefore, it shouldn't be hard to understand that in the spiritual world, there's also variety, even though everything is one. And so Radha and Krishna are one, but they separate to become two for the purpose of enjoyment. And so she loves Krishna the most. And that loving energy, if we're feeling love for Krishna, you know, there's a source to that love, and that source is Radharani. And she's the source of devotion. She's the topmost devotee. So it's mentioned here that by her grace, individual souls, even though they're marginal energy, and even though they may be somehow or other, they've come under the influence of this material energy, by her grace they can be allowed entrance into these pastimes. So we're also superior energy. What is it? Apara. How does that verse go? Apara, you know, in the 7th chapter. First, Krishna describes the material energy. Bhumirapanalovayu kamanobara evacha ahamkara ityame bina bhakatir ashtara apareyam itastu anyam prakritim vidimeparam jiva bhutam mahabahoya yedam daryate jagat. He says that the souls in this world, they're superior energy, but they've come in contact with material energy, and therefore they're bewildered. So when this bewilderment is finished, they can go back to the spiritual world. And so it's describing, basically in this verse, it's describing the two worlds, the spiritual world and the material world, and how they exist, you know, one and separately from each other at the same time. And Krishna, he's engaged in his pastimes in the spiritual world, and then the living entities are engaged here. So is there any questions about this verse or this purport?
I have one question.
Yeah.
But why is it
said that the living energy has water location on the other side of the river?
So it's described that there's a river that divides the material and the spiritual worlds, called the Viraja River. And so, unless you cross that river, you can't go to the spiritual world. It's also described in the earlier verses how there's, or maybe it comes later on, or it describes how, you know, there's the Dikpalas. Oh, yeah, in the previous verse 5 or 4, is it? 5, yeah. Previously, it was described that there, They are 10 protectors called Dikpalas in the 10 directions in the form of mantra. So you cannot cross over and enter the spiritual world without being allowed entrance. One thing is, I think, is a really important, philosophical point to understand is that we can see that we're spiritual energy, even by self-observation. You know, that what is eternal doesn't change, and what is temporary or what is material always changes. You know, so our consciousness never changes. So through self-observation, we can see we're eternal spiritual energy. And the material energy is changing, so we're different. But at the same time, we're not independent, right? We didn't choose, you know, our parents or where we were going to be born. And we also have no control over when we're going to die. So although we're superior energy, we're being dictated to. We're being controlled. You know, we cannot just will ourselves back to the spiritual world. We can't even will ourselves, into, you know, some people practice advanced practices of bhakti yoga where they meditate upon the pastimes of Krishna, particularly the eightfold pastimes called the Ashtakali Lila. You cannot, when one reaches a certain stage where the feelings become manifest, one can begin this kind of practice and meditation, but one cannot just force his way in to this meditation. It has to be revealed, and you have to be allowed to practice this. It has to be revealed to you within your heart. So this authorization, you know, for this practice to enter into this pastime is coming through Radharani. It's coming through Krishna, through Radharani. And so we have to patiently practice, humbly practice Krishna consciousness, and then these things are revealed. And it's not that we can, by our own will, by our own power, gain access. And so we see the advanced devotees of the, you know, like we read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and even our acharyas, you know, some of them, like when you read stories about Narottam Das Thakur and Srinivas Acharya, they were oftentimes, they would go into ecstasies for days, and their disciples would just sort of maintain their bodies. And they would come back and they would talk about, you know, they would still be experiencing the pastimes of the spiritual world. And some of the disciples would record, you know, what their experiences were and everything, and then they would come back to normal consciousness and perform their preaching activities, and then again they'd go back into these ecstasies, you know. So there's recording like this. So what I'm trying to say is that even though you still have a material body, there are some that reach such a degree of realization that they're also experiencing the spiritual world, even though they're still in the material world. So very advanced souls. But they have been granted access. So nice question about the Viraja River, one of the borders. Got to cross the border. Got to have a visa to get in.
It's the same as causal ocean, right?
I don't know about that, because you have the causal ocean where you have, the causal ocean, which is Vishnu's lying in the causal ocean. And then out of his pores come the universes as so many seeds. And then within those seeds develop into a universe unto themselves. And half the universe fills up with water. That's called the Garbhodaka ocean, and Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is laying on that. And then the lotus comes out of his navel and Brahma is there, so I don't know.
The ocean is in the meridional. It is just below the Brahmajyoti.
I can't answer your question. I don't know.
So I am reading the Bhagavad Gita.
Mm-hmm.
The Kasalosha is part of the material world.
Yeah.
No, so he is.
Is Viraja same as the Kasalosha?
Well, if someone can find a verse that maybe we can't now, but in your research, in your reading, especially when you read like fifth canto and describing the universe and everything, if you may come across where it will describe that, I can't. I have no idea.
Last sentence, which says the position of Goloka being absolutely annihilated with the mundane, deluding energy far from having any association with Krishna, feels ashamed to appear before his view. So here it clearly says that deluding energy is very, very far from having any association with Krishna. So what does that really mean, actually, that, you know, she never associates with Krishna?
Yeah, she's performing her service in the material world, but she is aware of Krishna. And she's a devotee of Krishna, and why is she embarrassed? Because she's performing this service of keeping the conditioned souls bound. So it's a thankless task that she's performing, so she's embarrassed about it. So Krishna, he's not really happy about it either. And yet she's doing this service for him. So
she's doing the service, means at least mentally, at the spiritual level, she is associated with Krishna, although maybe at the physical level, she's not.
She's not engaged in the pastimes in Goloka.
Okay.
You know, and she's not allowed entrance. Even Lakshmi is not allowed entrance there. There's different descriptions like that. And she's performing her service in the material world.
Thank you.
I don't know if I answered that, but it's all theory for me. So, next we have a bhajan, huh? And then chanting the verses. I always forget.